Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Mouse. This is the show where we affirm the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination to transform your life and get you through whatever life passages you might be dealing with. We have a wonderful guest today. His name is Ryan Hurd. He's a leading dream researcher. He's a lucid dreamer. His first book was about sleep paralysis, and I've recommended it to many since it came out because that's a problem that haunts a number of people in our society, and Ryan is one of those who robustly says that the challenge of so-called misnamed sleep paralysis can put you on the trail of becoming a lucid dreamer if you're willing to stay with it. One of the things that he talks about, he's given us a very elegant little new book. I stress little because it's an easy and short read, but it's a worthwhile read. It's called Lucid Talisman, and it comes with something that looks like a large coin or medallion with a solar symbol on one side and a lunar symbol on the other, and some words, a phrase in French on one side about living lucidly, and a phrase in Latin on the other side about being vigilant in dreams, vigilant in dreams. And this is his version of the dream talisman, which is going to help you, he says, become more of a lucid dreamer and approach everything with better intention and better results. Hello, Ryan.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me today.
I'm holding your talisman in my hand. I must admit, I haven't used it as a dream talisman myself yet, but I like the feel. You like to get words right, so do I. So tell us, what is a talisman and what is the difference between a talisman and an amulet?
Oh, what a great question. Yeah, you know, historically there is a distinction between an amulet and a talisman, one being the amulet to protect one from fear, and whereas the talisman is used more of a wider for wishes or for any kind of intentions that a person may have. But I, you know, for myself, I find that I'm just noticing that people use talisman and amulet interchangeably these days. And with my dream line of making these objects, I've decided to call the amulet the one that you wear on a string, and the talisman is the one you hold in your hand. And really, it's the intentionality the person brings to the object that makes the difference. That's the most important thing.
Well, like you, I love etymology and started out as an ancient history professor. So, of course, when I saw you making these necessary distinctions, I was excited and pleased. We don't know the exact etymology of the word amulet. I checked on this. It seems it's been connected by some scholars with a word that means to turn something away. So just to follow up with you said and support it, an amulet might have an apotropaic quality, turning something away. Whereas, as you tell us, a talisman is carrying you towards some destination, maybe towards the telos, or result, or outcome. And in the mysteries, in the mystery traditions, the teletai, the people, maybe related to the talisman, are the mystics. They're the initiates on their way to the greater mysteries. So there is this sense of forward movement, which is very consonant with what you're encouraging us to do in relation to dreaming and consciousness, move forward. But it is good to hold. So it might have that securing, steadying, anchoring quality, which would enable it to be an amulet as well. Anyway, whatever we call it, and I think talisman is the right word, you've given us a nice toy to play with. Now, some people are going to ask who haven't seen it. I'm sorry we can't show it because this is audio only. Some people are going to say, is this like the token in Inception? Is it like Inception? By the way, what do you think of the movie Inception anyway?
Right. I mean, I think Inception is a great inroad. Most people know of that movie And they use an object, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio called, I think he called it the totem, a totem object that he would, in his dream, it was a spinning top in the movie. And he would spin the top, and if it kept spinning, then he knew he was in a dream, right? And if it dumped over, then, oh, I'm in waking consensual reality. And so he used the totem as a reality check. And that's how I wanted this talisman to work as well, is for people who are lucid dreamers, who are doing the actual practice of making reality checks, because that's a wonderful cognitive practice that when you do it in waking life, it bleeds over into the dream world. If you actually really question reality, and that's key, right? You can't just phone it in. You really have to be like, am I dreaming right now? And then the question is, how do you know? And so there's these, you know, in the lucid dreaming community, there's explorations, different tests one can do to see, is this a dream or is this waking life? And so one can do this with the talisman itself. And one of the most reliable ones is to look at text. And to, because text is usually unstable in a dream. And so one can look at the talisman, look at the text on the, you know, on the talisman itself, which says, are you dreaming? You know, are you awake? Look away, look back, and if it's stabilized, okay, this is apparently waking reality, and so that's a successful reality check. But it might not be someone in a dream.
This takes us already to an interesting point of discussion, because I'm one of your contrarians here. I read endlessly in my dreams, and I'm often aware that I'm dreaming, and I actually read the way that I do in ordinary reality, and sometimes for longer, and sometimes I bring back whole pages of text. So it's the exception that proves the rule, Ryan. No doubt what you're saying might work for many, but all of my life, because I'm probably because I'm a very bookish fellow and always want more time to read more books than ordinary reality allows me, this has never worked for me. I mean, the text is sometimes more stable
for
me
lovely.
In the dream space
than
ordinary reality.
Every dreamer has to find a reality check that works for them, right? You know, one that works for me is holding my nose and trying to breathe through my nose. That's a really reliable one that, you know, that I also recommend for folks.
Yeah, you gave me a delightful vignette. I saw you at that moment holding your nose. Can I breathe? Am I dreaming? Of course, you know, for some of us, it's all a dream, isn't it? I mean, life is a dream. La vida es sueño. So for me, it's always been a question of being more conscious, more lucid, more aware of possibility of choice, of making conscious decisions, whatever reality I'm in, than about saying to myself, I'm dreaming, I'm dreaming, I'm dreaming. That, for me, again, I'm a contrarian, probably.
I agree with you because, right, the big picture is, as you say, you know, it's about taking our dreams more seriously and our waking life more like a dream. Like, we really, you know, creating that flux and flow of magical reality is the bigger work. And so, you know, that's absolutely, I love that.
I've also noticed that in indigenous and at least some ancient traditions, I mean, the flow, the interweave between dreaming with your eyes closed and dreaming with your eyes open is constant. It's constantly interweaving. I remember walking with a Native American who became a very good friend of mine, and one of the things he did was he made flutes. I mean, he made handcrafted flutes, Native-style flutes. And he was telling me, you know, Robert, I dream with my eyes open and all my senses open, and that's my relationship with the world. It's a dream relationship. And he showed me a flute he had made, or told me the story of a flute he had made for a woman, which he crafted from a piece of a tree limb, a dead tree limb, fallen tree limb, which had five strange strange wounds that looked like wounds in the limb. And he gave it to the woman. He said, these are not the holes that the flute player works with. They were marks, wounds, looked like, on the tree limb. And when he gave it to her, she said, do you mind if I raise my shirt? She gasped. She said, I don't know how you know this, because you don't know me. You made the flute for me, but you made it exactly right. She showed him she had five wounds, five scars from an old and terrible injury on her torso, matching the five wounds on the limb of the tree. And he gave this to me as an example of, for him, how things work together, weave together, come together in dreamlike ways in ordinary life. And for me, and possibly for you, it's very often like that, you know, in the world around us. So I'm very aware as I walk around of being hopefully as lucid as possible in a dream reality in which things are not necessarily as fixed and solid as people think, though you can't just walk through walls or jump off hotel roofs or mountains in your physical body the way you can in your dream. Here's another question. It's one of the reasons that I shied away from the phrase lucid dreaming, as you know, for a long time, and called my first book on all of this conscious dreaming, to give it a different kind of phrase.
Right.
One of the things I didn't like about the lucid dreaming community back then, or at least the loudest talkers, was sometimes this sort of adolescent stuff, teenage boy stuff, you can have sex with anyone, be master of the universe, and no moral consequences. For me, I'm not saying that I'm a particularly prim or prudish person, We are responsible for what we do in our dreams just as we are in any other reality. I mean, that's been my attitude. And I think that has been the attitude in dreaming societies since forever. I mean, people, it was a very serious crime in dreaming societies. We're not talking about the Inquisition or Western repression. We're talking about the understanding of dreamers themselves. That if you violate certain rules in the dream world, if, for example, you do a home invasion or take someone else's dream body without permission, you are culpable. You will be punished in some way or other. I've always held that attitude. What's your feeling about that? Is it all, you know, do we do whatever we like in dreams, or are there, do dreams carry responsibilities inside the dream space?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I also have shared that dis-ease with the lucid dreaming world, which I think a lot has to do with the marketing of lucid dreaming, and less so what I think advanced lucid dreamers really do. But constantly, the marketing message is lucid dreaming is controlling your dream. And this is, they're trying to just attract folks who are looking for control in their lives and looking to manipulate and looking to have, as you say, anything they want to do. Well, there's an interesting anthropologist, Robert Lohman, who studied the different paradigms of lucid dreaming that one can see all around the world. I think he came up with 5 of them. And the one that most of Western culture that you talked about is this idea that basically that lucid dreaming is a false reality or a virtual reality, and that nothing matters. And it's sort of just, you know, all of these values of I'd say, dispirited, broken, rational Western scientism are all comprised here. And that's definitely not how I approach the dream. For me, the dream is, the goal is not to do what I want, but to be more conscious in the dream, to make my choices, but to make sure I'm making room to listen and be in the flow of the dream and to encounter something, you know, larger than life, something that I don't know, and to explore from that perspective, that I have something to learn, that I'm not here to take, but rather that I have something to learn. And so that's a totally different paradigm, right? And yeah, I feel like we're constantly in that battle of that paradigm. And I also feel that people who do have that paradigm of always taking and trying to control, they get an initiation, and I think that they fail the initiation, and the dream boots them out, and they don't go any farther in their lucid dreams. Some don't have lucid dreams anymore. Others just lose interest and boredom. They don't move further in it. But there's a whole world beyond that once you learn that, you know, it's a larger ecosystem.
Right. Well, you're raising very interesting areas for discussion and exploration. I mean, the Seth material put many people on the trail of thinking about how dreams might be a model for reality creation, and indeed a place of reality creation. We're talking about something more interesting than simulation theory. I mean, simulation theory is relevant too, because what we create can be more or less worthwhile, more or less creative, more or less life-supporting, more or less sacred. But it's in the Upanishads. One of the things that goes on in dreams, according to the Upanishads, is that the dreamer who knows what he or she is doing, can emit. That's the word, emit. Emit. It's like ejaculation. That's actually the same verb. Can emit a reality which grows bright around them. Then there's the simulation track. I have a friend who's an Urdu scholar as well as a very distinguished Pakistani novelist who introduced me to the idea of the talism. Here we go back to your talisman, Ryan. because talismanism relates to the Arabic tilsam and the Urdu tilsam, which means a talisman. A talisman is a whole reality, a whole constructed reality, basically created by jinn, by genies, where people can live their whole lives in what, I guess, in our scientific mode, we'd call, you know, a simulation. So where do we go with all of this? Well, I think we go to what is creative and life-supporting, and the idea that in the dreamlands, or in the imaginal realm, as I often prefer to call it, there are temples, there are schools, there are places of pleasure and adventure, the places of discovery and initiation, which are the product of the creative imagination and are nonetheless real, and we can discover them through what you would call lucid dreaming, and I sometimes call that myself. And this is a very cool thing to do because it expands our lives, it expands our horizons, it makes us citizens of a multidimensional universe. This is a very good reason for catching on to, holding on to, and testing any methods, including the ones that you are offering, to make us more lucid as dreamers. So let's turn it over to you for a bit. You offer us many suggestions and techniques for becoming a more lucid dreamer. So let's leave the discussion of definitions for a while. And have you talked to those of us who perhaps are not lucid dreamers, may or may not be entirely clear about what that would be, but like the sound of becoming more conscious of what they can do in non-ordinary reality? Tell them some things they can do to go about becoming more lucid.
So lucid dreaming being about being aware in the dream that this is a dream or some kind of thought like that. And it doesn't have to be verbal. Some people really just feel it. They know it. They know that they're in a magical place. They know the rules are different in this place. I think about lucid dreaming almost as a sense of place. But then again, I was raised in the South in the United States, and everything is a sense of place in the South. That's just the legacy of Faulkner. And so what does that mean? And it means that it's not about control, again, but rather about choice. And so one can work with the dream energies to do whatever the dream is bringing about and just being more kind of conscious about it, noticing one's fear, moving towards what's scary rather than running away as one might do if they're in a less conscious place. Or bringing in waking intentions that I'd like to either see this, or I'd like to learn about this poetry, or I'd like to visit this wonderful land, and, you know, thinking about dreaming as the beginning of kind of like the land between lands, like in Narnia, where there's the forest with all the pools of water, and you can jump into the pool, and each pool takes you to a different world. You know, lucid dreaming, being lucid is just the beginning of the exploration. And so whatever the heart, and when I say the heart, I really mean the gut and the mind all together. When it's working together, lucid dreaming becomes very profound. And whether you're an atheist, or if you have, you know, religious convictions, or if you're on a spiritual path but don't consider yourself religious, all of it brings back, you know, these notions of what is real and how do you know what is real. And it's almost like it tests you and it plays with it. The dream's so playful in that way.
That's a wonderfully inviting statement. And when we come to theology or absence of it, it's not necessary to believe in any form of God or the divine to do these things, but there's one thing that will come to you as you do them. You will gradually become aware, or suddenly become aware, that consciousness is not confined to the body and brain, and therefore, by extension, is likely to survive the death of the body and the physical brain. And that will put you in a place of understanding the larger reality, with or without any form of deity. You know, that's what happens. And, of course, what also happens is people then come awake to the fact that when you die in the body, you don't necessarily die as consciousness, and you might be doing interesting things somewhere else, and you might be available for visits by those of us who are still on the side in this world. You're a very good writer, Ryan. It's an elegant little book. Before we get to the first break, give people your website so they can find you, and they can find your dream talisman. What is your website?
Right, it's lucidtalisman.com.
Okay, well, that's good.
Lucidtalisman.com. And the book.
Very good. And, you know, as I say, I haven't yet experimented with the medallion, the coin itself. I might, of course, I keep a strange life and do funny things at any hour. And much of my life, I would say, is spent in a condition that could be called lucid dreaming. I mean, drifting in and out of different things. There's so much going on that although I record a lot, I don't remotely begin to record all of it. One of the doors into what you would call lucid dreaming that has been most important for me in my life and resulted in some turning point moments is one I'm going to ask you to discuss after the break, and it's what I call dream reentry. You have an image, may have come to you from a dream or something like a dream. You use it as your doorway. You go through that doorway to do something, I mean, to confront a terror and go beyond it, which you were recommending, which is essential advice. In scary dreams, you might have met someone and you'd like a full conversation. You're somewhere romantic, full of wild adventure, and you'd like more. You'd like to learn something. You'd like to clarify the details of the dream because, gosh, is that plane crash really going to happen next week or not? And to come back to your sense of place as a Southern and someone who has a feel for things that matter. You know, a dream is a place. A dream might be a journey, a dream might be many things, but a dream is also a place, and if you've been in that place, then surely you can go there again. That's an idea that I find that people have little difficulty accepting. So let's talk a bit about the dream doors. Let's bring in some personal experience. I'd love to hear some of your own experiences of dreaming, because you're willing to talk about them, you talk well. And Ryan, I don't trust anybody who talks about dreams who doesn't share their own life as a dreamer. That's fundamental. All right, we must take a break. This is Robert Nosh. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. Our excellent guest is Ryan Hurd, and his latest creation is called Lucid Talisman, a book and indeed a talisman. We'll be back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Gingivitis, gum disease, words you don't want in your mouth. But according to the American Dental Association, 3 out of every 4 adults will develop gum disease. Now there's an all-natural way to fight back. Introducing the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies. Developed by a dentist and clinically tested by a leading university, the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies Daily Oral Rinse and Toothpaste was proven to kill the germs that cause gum disease better than the leading brands. Regular use was proven to reduce gingivitis and bleeding gums. The Natural Dentist contains herbs like echinacea and aloe vera and has no alcohol or sugar or harsh chemicals. The Natural Dentist is guaranteed to work or your money back. You can find the Natural Dentist at most drug and health stores, including Trader Joe's, Save-On, Walgreens, and Long's Drug Stores, as well as most health stores, including Whole Foods Markets and Wild Oats. Call 800-615-6895 or visit www.thenaturaldentist.com for more info.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dreamer. Our wonderful guest is Ryan Hurd. His new book is Lucid Talisman, and it comes with indeed a nicely heavy talisman, which is, as he points out, not meant to be just used as a paperweight. It's meant to be used to carry you into adventures and lucid dreaming. Ryan, for me, one of the royal roads to what we are calling lucid dreaming has always been to stay with an image or go back to an image that has come to me spontaneously in a dream or dreamlike state and go on with it, go further. Let me give you an example. So I'm sleeping in a cabin on Lake Champlain many years ago in the summer, brief summer vacation. and I dream I'm in a nice restaurant, upscale restaurant, with a beautifully dressed couple who come from the East. They come from the East, and I know that they're royalty, like a prince and a princess from the East. And we're having a nice lunch, but I've had enough lunch. So I get up to leave, and an old friend of mine runs after me, panting, and says, Robert, did you forget you were supposed to record the conversation? And I wake up really startled, supposed to record, and I can't understand, and I stay with the dream. I lie down at 3 o'clock in the morning on the bed, with light coming in through the slatted, you know, blinds, and I go back to the table and I sit with them, and I know his name. And before I sit with them, I open the envelope that my friend has given me when he says I'm supposed to record. It has several documents. One is a newspaper clipping saying the Prince and Princess of Fars are traveling abroad, F-A-R-S. It's the name for the old Persian heartland. So I have a sort of generic identity. I've listed 20 questions. I'm listening. I'm reading the questions, Ryan. They're not blurring. The questions are hyper-vivid. And I read the first 8 questions, and I write down the responses while lying in bed. So I'm in the dream, and my hand is writing on the pad, and it's legible, which is almost dreamlike for me. And anyway, I won't go on with it, but I come back with the beginnings of the most important spiritual dialogue of my life. I have never found any words in any spiritual text that matter as much to me as these. They're about the soul, its departure from its homeland, and how it begins to return to itself. And I go out as the morning light rises, and I lie in the floating dock on the lake, and it's all sort of upside down. The sky looks like the lake looks like the sky. And I say, thank you. So anyway, that was one of those very big moments, one of those big moments of awakening for me, and it came from staying with a dream, going back into the space of the dream, and going on with it. Now, we might do that for all sorts of reasons, some of them quite mundane, some of them quite epic. What's your feeling about this, and what's your experience of this? Is this something that you do with your own dreams? You stay with them, you go back into them?
Yes. I love that example, Robert. I think that, you know, dreams present us with unique healing imagery that are gifts, and you know, when it crosses that liminal space from the dream into the waking world, we have an opportunity to move further with the images, with practices and waking life, and then of course, as you're suggesting, moving back into the dream to go deeper into that sort of that portal that's opened up. Like, where does this lead? Now, one of my examples has to do with my repetitive dreams, and so I'm often trying to work out what's the hardest thing that I'm working on in a dream, and how can I kind of help that along. And so I used to have these dreams about wolves that would chase me and tear me to pieces, and I had this dream so many times I can't count it. And so I did an incubation. And I had a new solution in mind. And so I went back into sleep with this intention. And that night I did have the dream. The wolves came to me. They were angry. I ran, like usual. I found some high ground. And then I tried the new solution, which was to pull my hand into my pocket and to give whatever was there as a gift to the wolves. And I did so, not knowing what I would find, and it turned out to be a nice slab of good red meat. And the wolf in the pack came, and it took it out of my hand and licked the juices off of my hand. And at that moment, there was like a restructuring amongst the wolves. And I realized now that I was part of their group, and I could run with them, and I could call them when I needed them. And so that was just, and I woke up with this profound realization and healing energy that came out of that. And so it's powerful, and I think that really, it's notice your repetitive dream themes, because these are great anchor spots to do this kind of work with dream reentry.
What a beautiful example. Rohuaho, that's Mohawk. It means he-wolf. It means you are a wolf. Not you're like a wolf, but you are a wolf because you became a wolf. That's what a traditional member of the Kanyangahaka, the Mohawk people, might say. My dream encounters with the mother of the wolf clan of the Mohawk people from 250 years ago, as you might know, changed my life. They set me on a path of exploration and discussion that made it impossible to go back to the world I was in. So I very much appreciate that you told us the story of facing the wolves and becoming one with them and bringing them an offering. And you mentioned Narnia earlier, which will delight all the boys and girls inside, all the adults who are listening to us. You know, C.S. Lewis, you might know the story, once got a letter from an American fan who said, oh, she loved Aslan and she had dreams of the lion, she met the lion. C.S. Lewis, Jack Lewis, his friends called him, Jack Lewis writes back to her, and were you scared when you first met the lion? And she said, oh, no, he was so sweet. And Lewis wrote back that he probably was not a lion. First time you meet the angel, the lion, the wolf, the bear, you've got to be a bit scared. It can't all be sweet and cute and greetings card quality, or else it's not real. We have to brave up to claim our relationship with the powers that are stalking us, which is why the device of going back to face your fears is so worthwhile. What is on other occasions? Well, actually, let's take it back into your biography, because I know a bit about you, but not as much as I'd like to know. Take us back through your dream life, back as early as you want to go, and tell us about how your relationship with dreaming has evolved.
I was always a dreamer, and I remember as early as 5 or 6 years old of using hypnagogic imagery as I was falling asleep to create a portal. And then I would essentially, all that geometric imagery would begin to self-organize, become three-dimensional, and then I would enter the portal, and then I would fall asleep. And that was when I did that many times when I was 6 years old, and that was not something that I was taught, which is, again, just like, this is children. Children are such natural dreamers. It's so important to teach children how to dream. And I was very lucky that I had a family, and particularly my mother, who supported, listened to dreams. We talked about dreams. And so having a dream community is so important in the household, on the household level. But then I had nightmares, you know, as a teenager, and they were lucid at times. And again, repetitive dreams. I would have this repetitive dream of the clown from the movie Poltergeist that would... come and haunt me, and over time I learned how to work with that clown energy, and eventually, Robert, and I'm not making this up, I had a dream where I played badminton with the clown, and I've never had that nightmare again.
So it's always been
there, and it's always been part of me, but I went into archaeology after college for about 10 years and was an archaeologist in the southeast of the United States and also the West and California and Utah, but the dreams began coming back again, and I knew I needed a mentor, and so that's when I went to graduate school for dream studies in California about 15 years ago. And that I consider to be just sort of the turning point in my life of dedicating myself to dream education, helping wake up a new dreaming society, because I know that we'll become more whole as people if we all were able to talk about our dreams with each other.
Absolutely. Well, I want to slow you down and talk about your period of doing archaeology and whether you dreamed into the history or prehistory of people and things at those sites. I think we'll save that for the next segment. Cut off. But I need to ask you a question, Ryan. When you were talking about your early youth, I started seeing images of weapons, I mean heavy weapons, you know, machine guns, automatic weapons. You're a gentle guy and a gentle man. This isn't the kind of thing I normally see. The guns are popular in the South. Was I seeing it as something that was part of your nightmares or your family environment situation as a kid?
That's very interesting. Wow, an intuitive image. So not in my household. We did not have guns in our house. Guns were a big part of the Southeast, though. I lived kind of in the suburban country. My friend's grandfather ran a gun shop. I mean, we used to, run around.
Okay, a gun shop in the family. Okay.
No, my friend's grandfather. So guns were around, and I have a lot of police officers and folks in my family who've been in the Army and whatnot, including my father, who was in Vietnam. So it's definitely in the family mythology.
Right. Okay. It wasn't threatening. It was just there. And it was sort of, I wouldn't say it was insistent. That's too strong. It was just there while you're talking about your southern youth. So I thought I'd check and see whether it was relevant to the environment. All right. We're talking to Ryan Hurd. When we come back, who's an archaeologist as well as a dreamer, when we come back, we'll talk about what I like to call dream archaeology, which is the possibility that through dreaming, through shamanic journeying, through lucid dreaming, we can put ourselves inside the real, authentic, living history of people and places. So, we listen to The Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back after the break.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
We are coming back with Ryan Hurd, and we have so much to talk about. I was just talking about an episode. Oh, sure, an episode of Dreaming with the Land. And I'll tell it. I got slightly cut off during our break, and then I'm going to ask Ryan about what he's doing in Costa Rica and in the general area of what he's calling ancestral recovery. It's going to be really good, and we'll do a bit more general about dream archaeology. So I was telling Ryan that some years ago I was teaching in Costa Rica at a retreat about dreaming and writing, and it rained harder than I've known it to rain anywhere during the 1 month it's supposed to be dry in this part of the rainforest. And my dreaming during through the howl of monkeys and the rage of the storm was of, amongst other things, a shaman warrior hunter who had red markings around his mouth, and I knew that he was using arrows and darts that were tipped with the venom of a little red frog, which is seen in that country, and other details. And I told the owner about this in my bad Spanish, and he got very excited. He said, "You've dreamed into, you know, the condition of the first peoples. They're still here." And he showed me some materials and some photos. And then when we were leaving the resort to go to the airport, he comes running out. He's got an armful of spears and arrows and darts and other primitive weapons. He said, "These are for you because you dreamed of these people. These are their weapons. Take them." I said, "Look, I'm going to the airport. I can't arrive with an armful of weapons, even if there's no metal." No, they'll wrap them for you at the airport. So I get on the bus and people looking very fidgety and uncomfortable. I go to the airport and they're wrapped and I leave. So that's an example of maybe spontaneously dreaming with the land, Ryan. So out of it, you know, bifurcating way, let's come to a fork, take it. I want you to take both paths. There are two paths for discussion as I see it. One is What has your experience been of dreaming of the land on those archaeological sites, for example? And number two, what's this ancestral recovery thing that you're up to in Costa Rica? So two questions for you.
Right. So thanks. I love discussing this. And, you know, the stones are very special to me, having worked with lithics for a decade in the lab and in the field, in pottery and doing surveys and excavations. I learned a feel for the topography of the land, and which is a dreaming landscape, by the way, in such a way that I think most people don't understand. For instance, in where we are, Robert, in the Great Eastern Woodlands, you up in the north and me a little farther south, there's this ancient tradition of stone rock piles. And when I was an archaeologist back in Georgia, my private, you know, the principal investigators, they didn't want us to record the stone piles because they were everywhere, and they had a theory that they were all farmer clearing piles. And I knew this was not true, and I tried to record them whenever I could because it was bad archaeology. And just now, finally now, it's really coming out about sort of this ceremonial landscape and stone that's hidden in the woods. And dreams definitely supported that. I had a dream once of, I was in California at the time, and I just moved back to California, but I hadn't really made my contact with the land. And I had a dream where I climbed up onto a rock pile, and as soon as I did so, I noticed that there were petroglyphs, you know, carvings all over the stone. And then it's like reality shifted and it flipped, and I was looking in the distance of this beautiful mountain. Is Mount Diablo, which is the mountain that's just east of the San Francisco Bay Area. It just towers over the area. And then it's like reality flipped again, and I was looking at the eastern woodland in the mountains of the Appalachia. And then it flipped again, and I was in another California spot. And this went on, this sort of just this toggling back and forth between different landscapes of my past and as well as the landscapes of where I was presently dreaming and sleeping. I woke up from that dream, and I knew immediately that I needed to honor the dream of Mount Diablo and go drive as far and climb up into Mount Diablo and make an offering and say a prayer. And I did so. And when I did so, it's a long drive and then a long hike. And I was on the trail, and I had this sudden urge, this intuition, to move off of the trail and go uphill. There was a steep embankment along a dry creek bed, a seasonal spring. And I kind of climbed up among these ropes of trees and came upon a flat spot on the landscape. And there was a stone, a flat stone, with a bedrock mortar in it. And a bedrock mortar is a spot where native folks would use a pestle and crush acorns or other kinds of, you know, nuts like that for a meal. And this is the first time I ever had found something like an ecofact or an artifact on that mountain after having been there, you know, in that 4 or 5 years, you know, and then having come back. This was the first time that I really ever experienced that, and it was just this profound gratitude that poured through me that the land was saying, welcome back, you know, here you are, welcome back. And so I did my prayers at that spot, and that's it. That's the, you know, the land comes through the dreams, and we make contact through the land. And as myself, as a settler, as someone who's not, you know, Native American, it is perilous, this ancestral recovery process, but we can learn from Native Americans about how their ways have focused and come through the intuitions and dreams of the land, and so we can kind of rekindle our own land dreaming, kind of, you know, coming back, you know, beyond the what whiteness is and coming back into fuller identity. And so that's what ancestral recovery is about, and so there's a process, there's a class that I teach once a year in Costa Rica on dreams and ancestral recovery, part of an Indigenous Studies and Peace Studies program at the University for Peace. And I teach dreaming as a methodology for folks to get in touch with their own ancestry. It's very powerful.
That's a beautiful story of finding the mortar stone by following the path of the dream and then finding something beyond the dream that confirms the whole enterprise. And the work you're doing is so important. Beautiful work, Ryan. Thank you for doing it. You know, I'm convinced that the ancestors and three senses are calling to us all the time. Ancestors of our bloodlines. And sometimes we have some cleanup work to be done, don't we? As ancestors of the land. And sometimes there's some atonement to be made because, you know, white people are not the original inhabitants of North America, for example, and they haven't necessarily been very good residents. And then there are the ancestors of our broader, multidimensional, or let us say spiritual family, who might initially be quite strange to us, who might discover that we have a Chinese identity or a Lithuanian identity or something else. That I've discovered this in my travels quite often, that I have soul family connections. People who are into past lives might say, well, that's your past life, Robert. I'm content in a more Sethian fashion to say that I've met personalities and situations and lineages that are part of a story that I am part of, a story of a multidimensional family. So that's an ancestral story, too. And there's another thought, that dealing with the ancestors is not just about dealing with the past. It's about dealing with the future, because as the Iroquois or Iroquois say, they're the originators of the sustainable mantra. We must look at the consequences of our actions down to the seventh generation beyond us. But in a sense, when we talk about ancestors, we need to be looking at our descendants and understand that we have, in a sense, ancestors from the future, too. And dreams speak to us about that also, as well. All right, so much to talk about. It's a pity we don't have another 3 hours, so we'll do it. We'll do what we can in the next 8 minutes. We're talking to Ryan Hurd. His website, and you can find his book, Lucid Talisman, which I recommend. His website is lucidtalisman.com, and if I got that wrong, he'll correct me after the break. I'll take a break, and then we'll be back with Way of the Dreamer.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call EarthChannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978. Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
All right, we're having a really good time with Ryan Hurd and his book, his new book, which comes with a talisman. No kidding. Hefty, satisfying, it's actually quite beautifully produced talisman. solar on one side, lunar on the other. His new book is Lucid Talisman, and he's been talking to us about recovering ancestral soul, ancestral identity, which I might call cultural soul recovery. He's also talked a bit about his adventures as an archaeologist and how dreaming has been part of that and how all his life he's been a dreamer. Ryan, if you think about turning point dreams in your life, a dream or several dreams that have made a big difference, maybe just the way you walk in the world or guided a decision or just expanded your horizons, is there a particular dream or a series of dreams that you think about as turning point moments in your life?
You know, what's coming up right now is an early dream, a lucid dream that I had. I was probably about maybe 21 years old, 22, and I was at my childhood home, again with repetitive dream imagery, right? Yeah. I probably dream about this home a billion times, and I was in the driveway, and I realized that I was dreaming, and I had a question, a curiosity, is how deep is this dream place? And I began to sort of push my hand into the concrete of the driveway, and at first it would not yield. It was hard and gritty and, you know, as real can be. But then something happened, and the concrete began to give. It became soft, and my hand dug into it, and I began scooping a hole out, you know, of this place, and it turns out that about 4 inches down was a dark, glimmery, with lights flickering, like void-like space underneath this imagery. And I enlarged the hole, and I jumped in. And when I did so, I lost my dream body, and I became sort of a spot of consciousness in what seems to be an infinite void. And I felt my sense of self also expand with the void itself. And I became the void. And then, I don't remember what happened next, but I woke up. And that dream blew my mind. That was the dream that I was like, okay, so reality is truly not as I think.
Right.
That
blew your mind
on this adventure of exploring those spaces.
I just want to suggest, if it's my experience, it's blowing my mind open, not blowing my mind to smithereens, the way people use it. I thank you for the muscular, gritty quality of your narrative. So, as I understand you, when you succeeded in digging through the concrete and got through the hole, you left behind the body that did the digging. You're now no longer in that second body. That's gone. You've moved beyond the vehicle you were in, as well as beyond the physics of the space you were in. Right.
It's
so interesting, isn't it? It is so interesting. You reminded me. I mean, I've had many experiences of going through what seems like a solid wall or something like that, not cement on the ground necessarily. But you took me right back to my experience when I was 9 years old, when I was under surgery in an operating room. I stood up with that, so I left my body, and it sounds like a typical NDE for a while. I'm seeing the nurses, seeing the surgeons, leave the room, don't like watching my mother grieving, drift down the hall. Look out through the windows of the hospital, and remember there's a theme park, Luna Park, just for fun, along the waterfront, and I want to go and do things that a red-blooded 9-year-old boy would like to do. So I start trying to leave the hospital, I'm pushing at the windows, and it doesn't budge. It's easier than cement, I guess, but eventually it stretches like toffee. It becomes very soft and granular, and I'm out hot, and then I'm down at the theme park, and then actually I get on the ghost train and find myself in another life that felt like, what felt like 90 years, and when I come back, they have pronounced me clinically dead. So your experience didn't go that far, therefore it reassures us that we don't have to go to that kind of extremity in order to wake up to the larger reality. Dreaming, as an everyday practice, will do it. And that's why we want to encourage people to journal their dreams and learn how to share them well, so we can hear each other's stories and give each other non-authoritarian feedback and always guide each other to action. One of my favorite actions with dreams, Ryan, because I'm a bookish character, is to do
the research, do the reading, do the writing. So I am forever following the detective assignments my dreams lead me, which right now have me reading scholarly editions of the Chaldean Oracles, which are fragmentary texts from the 2nd century, which are central to the Neoplatonist school and were revived in the Renaissance by people like Ficino. This might sound like extremely tedious, esoteric museum stuff. It's not. Why am I deeply engaged in it? Well, I like odd byways of knowledge and research, but my dreams have been guiding me again to a lineage of philosophers in the original sense, lovers of Sophia, lovers of wisdom, not academic disputers, but lovers of wisdom. So I love this kind of thing. I love the dreams that give me phrases from languages that I don't know or know only imperfectly, as the Mohawk clan mother gave me the word Ondinunk, which is from the sacred vocabulary of the Wendat, which survived for the early Mohawk people through interface between the two communities. It means the secret wish of the soul, especially as revealed in dreams. When I had that word, I had the key to a cultural approach to dreaming that says that basically in a decent society, you gather around each other, you listen to a dream, and you help the dreamer to recognize what the soul is asking for, the Ondinunk, the secret wish of the soul, and desire, so the soul doesn't get disgusted and go missing. Well, I'm very sorry that we're just about out of time, Ryan, because I would be happy to continue this conversation for longer. We'll be back after break, really, just to say dream on. We've been talking with great delight, I think, to Ryan Hurd, dream researcher, lucid dreamer, one who gives you keys to what to do about sleep paralysis if you or someone in your ambit needs that guidance, whose new book is a charming provocation to do more lucid dreaming with what I would call an intelligent toy to play with, and it's called Lucid Talisman, and his website again is lucidtalisman.com. We'll be back for a moment after the break.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcasting coders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call EarthChannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
I've been talking to Ryan Hurd, dream educator, dream researcher, dream advocate, dream archaeologist, author of the Lucid Talisman. Ryan, such a pleasure to have you. Thank you for sharing so much of yourself and your passion for dreaming.
I had so much fun, Robert. I love it. Thanks again.
I think people feel the fun of it all. So to everybody, may your best dreams come true. And may you remember them.